Thank you for listening to this podcast brought to you by the Center for Christian Music Studies at Baylor University. This podcast was recorded at the 2012 Alleluia Conference. For more information about Alleluia, visit our website where you will find conference dates and details, audio and video recordings, and a list of confirmed clinicians for next summer's event. For this information and more, visit us online at www.baylor.edu/alleluia.
I'm Sid Davis, and I'm the Director of Music and Fine Arts at St. Luke's United Methodist Church in Houston. And I have been there, I'm in my 17th year, and which is very surprising to me. You know how on the inside you don't feel like you're old enough to have been any place that long? Believe it or not, I feel that way. I was brought to St. Luke's 17 years ago to start a youth choir. There had been no youth choir there for about 25 years. Mm-hmm. And I had never done that before, and I wasn't sure that I could do it. I had been at a large church, and there was a huge youth choir that was a giant tradition at that church, and I hadn't killed it. It was still thriving when I left, so they thought that, you know, maybe I could start a youth choir there. And I will say, thanks to many people, it's been the most successful thing I've ever been part of. It just took off. And we have worked very, very hard and continue to work very hard. It is, as you know, hard work. It can be heartbreaking work. It can be work that you think, if I died today, I'd be happy, you know. But it is, I direct the chancel choir. I'm in charge of the program. But the kids are my favorite thing. I would rather be with them. I'd rather be with them on the bus than anything, truly. My children came up through that youth choir. We were just really fortunate, you know, to be able to work together like that. Just a personal note about me, I have multiple sclerosis, which, interestingly, timing is everything. I went to St. Luke's in May of 96 and was diagnosed in October of 96, so it was like, oops, sorry guys. If you'd like to call this off, I understand, but it's been a great place to be, and I'm really very, very lucky. Two things. First of all, somebody said a long time ago at something like this that I was attending, the speaker stood up and said, the unspoken statement at the beginning of any of these is, now I'm going to show you how to be just like me. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, how awful. How awful is that? So I'm always worried that it might come off that way. That's not what I intend at all. We can all learn things from every person in this room. No one's cornered the market on youth choir wisdom. No one. Least of all me. And so I'm eager to hear what you have to say and ideas that you have and the way that you do your tours. This is just the way we do ours. And I also want to say, people will say, well, you know, you're at St. Luke's, you're at a big church. Bob Simpson, who directs the Houston Chamber Choir, Nancy and I are mutual friends, he's a mutual friend, said to me a long time ago that he knew that bigger is bigger. And that's exactly right. A friend of mine told me not too many weeks ago that he thought, well, he put it rather indelicately, but that was not true. And I said, well, trust me, either the problems are larger or you just swap problems for other problems. So bigger is only bigger. Now, having said that, I will tell you that I pour my heart and soul into youth choir, and some of our tours are going to look like, oh my gosh, I could never do that. But I ask you to keep your mind open, because there was a time when we thought we could never do that. But I'll leave you to make your own assessment of that. And I'm not checking my text. My notes are on my phone. I realized the other day, maybe a month or so ago, I could be a full-time youth choir director. I could do that full-time and be totally happy. Now, you may say, why did it take you this long to realize that? I guess I was just thinking about it. I get to do this several times this summer. And as I was putting all this together, I thought, you know, I could do this all the time and be very happy. I love my adults, and we have a great time. But I am happiest when I'm with the kids. Being with the kids, thinking about the kids, planning for the kids is when I'm at my happiest. And great, I'm very grateful for the success that we have enjoyed bringing the youth choir, Pure Sound, into being. By the fall of 1996, we started on Labor Day of 1996, Labor Day weekend. We take a retreat, which if we're together later today, I'll tell you about that. We started Labor Day of 1996, and by October and November, they were singing regularly in church at the 8:30 service, and they sing every Sunday morning at the 8:30 service. And I knew pretty much right away that I wanted to travel with them. I didn't know what that would look like. We had traveled some at my other church at Chapelwood, but not quite the way I wanted to do it. But I knew I wanted to do it, and I wanted it to be right. I had a senior pastor when I went to St. Luke's who said, you can always tell if something was started right, whether it's a church or a youth choir or anything. And, you know, at the time he said it, I just sort of filed that information. But I believe it's really to be true. And I'm happy to say that Pure Sound was started right, thanks to the wisdom of a lot of people. And I believe that our tours were started right. You really want it to be right. And you realize then that you want everything to be right about that trip. You want all the aspects of a tour to be nothing left to chance when you're traveling with anybody, certainly with youth. And it can be a little bit daunting, as you know. So today we're going to talk about choir tour outside the box. Often, as youth choir directors, if you say to someone, well, I direct the youth choir, you can sort of see them glaze over, and they automatically have a picture of what that looks like. They don't know what that looks like. They have no idea. And it can look so vastly different than what the world thinks. So here's what I decided all those years ago. First of all, why travel in the first place? And I would ask you to really ask yourself that question. And if it is because everybody does it, then you need to think harder. I would say that about just about anything. If you're doing something just because everybody does it, and you know, oftentimes in church, we end up doing that. Because the church down the road has this kind of service, we're going to start one, or they have this kind of small group thing, we're going to start that. And I just don't think that's a great idea. First of all, why travel? One second. For me, the largest part of this is my kids work really hard. I ask a lot of them. They're at church for the 8:30 service, they're singing by 8, and then they come back on Sunday afternoon and rehearse from 4 to 5:30. And that's just Sunday. Plus any special things we do, if it's a musical, we do a musical every year, we tour, etc. So my kids work really hard, and they are an enormous part of St. Luke's, the heart of St. Luke's, and I believe they deserve a reward. Now I want to quickly say, I know a lot of people do tours that are combined choir tour and mission trip, and I say, more power to you. That's not what we do. It's not that I don't believe in that. That's just not the shape that ours has taken. They do a lot of mission trips in the youth department, a whole lot. And especially now to change what we do and to make it that, I don't know, it doesn't seem like maybe that's the way to go. It's not that I don't believe in mission work. I do. For me, it's a reward for hard work. The second thing is, and I believe this to be true of any church, not just St. Luke's, we're all different, and the kids don't realize that. I want them to understand that worshiping bodies look different in different places, and that everyone is as proud of their church as we are of St. Luke's. It's very easy. We'll have kids go off to college and then get married, and they'll come back and say, well, I moved so-and-so to such-and-such place, and I just can't find a church like St. Luke's. And I say, why are you trying? You could be missing some giant treasure, you know, and it just because it doesn't look like St. Luke's. Stop it, you know. Go someplace and be part of who they are and what they are. When we went to the UK a number of years ago, I did my best to drill into them, not to say, well, these people drive on the wrong side of the road. They don't. They drive on a different side of the road. Theirs isn't wrong. Ours isn't right. And I think that's an enormous part of being able to teach kids while they're so impressionable, you know, that just because a worshiping body does this and we don't, it doesn't make them wrong. It makes them different. We're different. I'm huge on the fact that these kids are ambassadors for St. Luke's, for the Church Universal, for Christianity. They are ambassadors. We've all been on planes with youth groups, and you thought, if there's a way off this plane at 30,000 feet, I'd take it. My kids are not going to act that way.
That's right.
They're just not. I'm happy to say, and this is a shameless, I'm bragging shamelessly, we have thank you letters from hotels that say, we would absolutely have you again. Absolutely. But one of the most wonderful things that happened, it was really, I don't know, it played out perfectly. We went to Scotland 4 years ago, 2 years ago, a while ago. And do you remember that British Air was possibly going to go on strike? The cabin crews were going to go on strike, which meant the planes would be grounded. That was about the time we were to go on the trip, so we were really nervous. And then it was going to be okay. So we were at the airport, and I gathered the kids together and said, first of all, this plane does not belong to us, and I'll expect you to act accordingly. Second of all, you all know about the British Air squabble that just happened, and the worst thing you could do would be to get on that plane and ask someone, well, what did you think about the proposed strike? I said, that'd be like going next door and asking the family next door, so how about that family fight we overheard yesterday? I said, it's none of our business. It's just none of our business. So we get on the plane, and I find the head flight attendant, and I told her, but it's a huge plane. We were spread out all over the place, which actually is a good thing. And I said, if you have any trouble, please come and get me. I'm the one that's responsible. And near the end of the flight, she came to me, and she said, the captain wants me to tell you he's never seen such a well-behaved group of young people ever. And I said, gosh, thanks so much. That means a great deal. Then, as we were landing, the pilot got on the intercom and told the whole plane about the Pure Sound from St. Luke's United Methodist Church. And to be held to a high standard like that, kids are looking for boundaries. And certainly, youth choir can do that for them. So it's a huge thing to be an ambassador for the church, for Houston, for Christianity, all that. And last but not least, a huge part of how tour came to be and the shape that you're going to see is a character flaw of mine. And that is, I just don't like to do what everybody else does. I just don't. If the world is reading a certain book, I just don't read it. I don't know why, I don't plan it, but I just don't like to do what everybody else is doing. So our choir tour looks very different. And there are going to be some things about it that you think, I don't want to do that. But here you are. And so it began. We took our first tour in 1997, and we went to Disney World, and we're part of the candlelight procession at Disney World. And if you haven't done that, my goodness, what an amazingly organized thing. It is something to behold. And there are a number of performances every night. I want to say four. And it's a mass youth choir. I think I have a picture here. It's a mass youth choir. And they send you have to audition, and they send you music, and you learn the music, and then you join other kids. I think there were 450 kids in that choir. And of course, in fine Disney tradition, there's everything up there but penguins. I mean, there's herald trumpets and a full orchestra and handbells and a select ensemble in the middle. And I mean, it's amazing. So it was a great thing. I can recommend that to you highly. It's called Candlelight Procession. We committed to tour the week after Christmas every other year. This is the first place where you'll go. This man has lost his mind. But here's why I did it. First of all, let me see, I may have these things up here. There's the candlelight procession. It's not a great picture. And it's cut off. There are many kids this way and many kids this way. But it was a great experience. And we did four performances that night, which is a lot. It's pretty strenuous.
Did you say Disneyland or Disney World?
Disney World.
Yeah.
I'm sure they do the same sort of thing at Disneyland, which would be much closer to you.
Sorry, see, can I just ask?
Sure.
Is that candlelight procession, I'm not familiar with, is it a Christmas event?
Christmas,
It's a one-time?
No, it goes on for like 14 days. So it's going on after Christmas. And it's in Epcot, I think. Can't believe I can't remember that. And you do, if you go on their website, there'll be information about it, about how to audition, and et cetera. And it's not easy music. It's pretty predictable music, but it's not necessarily easy music. But kids can do anything, so they can do it. And I can recommend that to you highly. It was a fabulous experience. They are friendly to the kids. It's like a huge machine. I mean, it works just like this. It's awesome. Here's what I learned. If you tour every other year, biannually, parents are happy for their children to be gone and out of the house right after Christmas. Now, if you did it every year, I wouldn't try to do it every year because families want to be together. But to do something that's, significant the week after Christmas, it's okay. We have even left on Christmas Day a couple of times. We don't want to do that, but I need to be where I'm going to be so that they can sing the Sunday after Christmas, and it just all depends on how Christmas falls. I make huge apologies to the families about leaving on Christmas Day, but, it's worked every time. This is a picture of us in Scotland. We sang in St. Mary's Episcopal Cathedral the Sunday after Christmas 2 years ago. And interestingly, there's no heat in that building at all. And the worship leaders wore their heavy coats over their vestments. It was so cold. It was bitterly cold. But it was a fabulous, fabulous trip. I like to go places where the singers are going to experience something different, both culturally and climate-wise. And in Houston, we have pretty much 1.5 seasons. We have hot and not so hot. So it's nice to go someplace cold. You'll see in a few minutes that this last time we did something really out there. I hope y'all don't lose respect for me over some of these places that I chose to go and think there's just no way we could do it. Because there is a way you could do it. Absolutely, there's a way you can do it. One of the things that was wonderful on a tour a number of years ago, we took the kids to Alaska. And we went to an Orthodox cathedral out in the woods north of Anchorage. And first of all, just experiencing that Orthodox lifestyle was amazing. But they have a woman there who is a full-time iconographer, who has a tiny room just off the sanctuary. And y'all, it was one of the most amazing spiritual experiences of my life. She sits in that tiny room, has a very high ceiling. I mean, it's really not a whole lot bigger than a closet. And she has, hang in there with me, she has the obituaries of everyone from that congregation who has died, all taped to the wall. It's like she's surrounded by souls. And she paints or writes icons all day long every day. And she came out and talked to the kids about painting the face of God and wept. And they were just rapt. I mean, it was amazing. It was an amazing experience. So I encourage you to think outside the box about where can I take them that doesn't look like home, where people's faith seems so far different from ours. But I'm telling you, they were moved by that, really moved. So
you had no idea that was going to happen.
I knew that they had a full-time iconographer. I didn't know how much she would be willing to speak to them. She was very introverted, as you can imagine an iconographer would be. But she was delightful and spoke. I mean, she was not the least bit hesitant to share her soul with those kids. And one of the cool things, just a bookmark, the sanctuary is round, as many of the Orthodox sanctuaries are, and it was a dome, and then in the middle of the dome was another dome, like bumped up dome. And if you look straight up, there was an icon of Jesus, a bust of Jesus looking down, huge, as you can imagine. And when that building was being built, which was, it was built by the people in that community, the only way to access that upper dome was scaffolding on the outside of the building. And she went up there and sketched that icon, and the entire congregation went up one by one and painted it, even the children. So when they look up there, that's their work. It was amazing. It was truly amazing. So, experience different climate and different culture. Here they are in Scotland. Really wanting their coats, I'm sure. And there's no competition with other youth choirs the week after Christmas. I mean, you probably think, duh. But, you know, you say to a church, could we be your choir on the Sunday after Christmas? They nearly faint. Of course you can. We've sung some amazing places that needed, their choir needed the Sunday off. So, I really am not nuts. Last year, 2011, we went to Cuba. It is possible to go to Cuba. And if you wanted to do a mission trip, Cuba would be a great place to do it. Because of the Obama administration, it's much, much easier to get there. There's a visa called people-to-people visa. It could be done not expensively. The people are amazing. You feel so safe. It's just incredible. Everybody's so friendly. There's no anti-American sentiment at all. Later we can talk about visas and stuff. We tried to get a religious visa so that we could sing in a church, but we struggled with that and ended up getting the people-to-people visa, which is actually easier. And because we did not have a religious visa, we could not sing in churches. Because if we did, that church would be fined $1,500, which for them is a fortune. Our tour guide made $25 a week. So $1,500 is vast. So we were able to interact with people from churches, but not at the church, because we didn't have a religious visa. So, Cuba. Any church would love to have you sing the Sunday after Christmas. This is the kids singing at York Minster in England, which was a beautiful, beautiful day. Many places, sacred and secular, are still celebrating the holiday and have live music venues. You can sing at the National Christmas Tree for like 10 days after Christmas. They have groups every night. It is so cold, but it's a great place. There's a stage, and it's just one music group after another. And it's easy to get into. Again, you have to audition, but it's easy and very organized. And of course, the kids, while they're singing, they see the Washington Monument and the White House, and I mean, it's pretty jaw-dropping. But a lot of places have music things that happen, holiday things that happen after the holiday, like candlelight procession. This is the kids singing at St. Paul's in London, which I actually didn't think we'd get accepted to do, but we did, and it was quite a time. There are events around New Year's that are family-oriented. Big cities have a program called First Night, and it's a family-oriented celebration of New Year. Even New York City has it. And you buy, like, I don't even remember how much it is, maybe $25 a person or something like that, and you get a button, and that lets you into all of these events all over town and gets you food, and museums are open, concerts outside and inside. One year I did it in New York, and we at midnight were in Grand Central Station, and the Orchestra of St. Luke was playing waltzes, and every person was down there waltzing, including my kids. They don't know how to waltz, but they were down there waltzing to this orchestra. It was pretty amazing. And that's all part of the First Night program. So there are things to do. Now, let me quickly say, if there's not something big and special to do on New Year's Eve, the kids don't care. Get a room, like at the hotel, and have a dance. You know, you have to monitor the music and you have to monitor what they wear, but they just want to be together. They don't care. So it can be hugely involved or hugely simple. this is us singing at the church in Eagle River, Alaska, the United Methodist Church. And on a clear day, at the front of the church, looking through this glass window, you can see all the way to Denali. You can see the mountain. It's gorgeous. That was a great trip. And parents are so funny. Many parents freaked when I said I was going to take the kids to Alaska in the wintertime. They said, there's no sunlight, which is not true. I mean, there's not a lot of sunlight, but there is sunlight. And they were so worried about the cold. And I said, you know, you don't explode when it's cold and you step outside. People do stuff outside in Alaska in the wintertime. We had a blast. We had a blast. And Alaska is so gorgeous. As I said, on the other hand, New Year's doesn't have to be a huge blowout. Kids are just, they just want to be together. This is a picture of Edinburgh. And believe it or not, I took that with my phone. I think that's a pretty good picture. For me, singing 3 to 4 times in like an 8-day trip is plenty. And it depends on where those 3 or 4 times are. But because they sing every Sunday, if they sing too much on tour, they're just exhausted. I did that once, and they were just exhausted the whole time. I didn't leave enough time for rest. And especially if you're traveling time zones, you need to be very aware of that. This is them singing in Cuba. We sang, we ended up singing for this youth choir from this United Methodist Church in Cuba. And for you Methodists in the room, there's a Methodist bishop in Cuba. The United Methodist Church is well established, and there are lots of churches. You see a lot of churches boarded up, but there are a lot of very active churches. We sang for them, they sang for us, and then we treated them to dinner, which was great. And it was the loudest 2.5 hours you've ever heard, because people, even we're not English speakers are not the only people who think if they talk louder they'll be understood. I have learned to sing as early during the tour week as I possibly can. Maybe once I took a tour and the kids didn't sing until like day 2 or 3, and they forget who they are. It's sort of like cabin fever. They get really restless. So that was part of our Washington trip. Don't try to do this by yourself. Get a lay person who will be your head counselor person and help plan the trip, and delegate everything you can to that person. It has to be somebody you trust and somebody who gets it, who gets your vision. But let them take that off your shoulders, and that kind of delegation feels like flying. It's the most wonderful thing. And I've had really 2 head counselors over the years, and both of them have just been brilliant, and they shoulder so much of the work. But do not try to do it yourself. Don't try to do youth choir by yourself. Don't do it. Can't. You'll kill yourself trying. This is on our trip to
Disney World.
Yeah.
Is your head counselor usually a parent of a child? Of a youth?
Both times, it has started out that this person was a parent of a youth, and then the youth graduated, and I kept that person as long as they were willing to do it for a while. But right now, yes, my head counselor is a parent. It requires, you know, a good bit of face time, but she takes on so much of what needs to be done. It's wonderful. Choose your counselors so carefully. Do not take anybody. Well, first of all, let me say, here's one of my big things. I think that our society suffers from a sitcom mentality. Sitcoms have taught us that anything for a laugh, particularly at the expense of youth. Because, I mean, you think about it, people joke about kids all the time. Even when they don't mean it, they joke. And I'm not going to take anybody who comes back, and if someone says, well, did you survive? And they say, oh, my gosh, you've never seen so many suitcases or blow dryers or, you know, iPods. I'm just not going to do it. And I tell them openly, if someone says, did you survive, I better hear you say, no, we thrived. Because I need people who are going to thrive with kids. I don't want to take anybody who thinks it's just happen. It's an it's a vacation that happens to have 60 teenagers on it. You know, it's all about the kids. And I tell the story many, many years ago. My father, my late father, fell ill just before I was to go on a trip with the youth choir at Chapelwood. And my wife said, I mean, it was days before. My wife said, you go, and I'll go to Shreveport and be with your parents, and you go, but you're going to have to take, at that time we had two children. Taylor Davis, by the way, the composer, is my son. And you're going to have to take Taylor and Meredith. And they were, gosh, I don't know, 7 and 10 or something. They were young. And we took a bus, and we also took a church van. And so for some reason, God spoke to me, and I thought, I'm going to just spend all that time with my children as much as I can. And I made my explanation to the youth choir, and I said, you're just going to have to understand. I'll be there for you, but I also have to be with my children. We sat on the back seat of that van, and I dedicated every day to them. They had never behaved before or since so beautifully because they had my full attention. If you take counselors who know that their job is to give their full attention to the youth choir, to those kids, your kids will behave beautifully. If you take counselors who think it's a vacation, then the kids are going to make trouble. It's going to be trouble. And the counselors won't be happy. So I don't know what the word is. I lay it out there. I'm strong with the counselors. This is us. We went to Boston and the Berkshires one year, and this is us at the Norman Rockwell Museum. We like snow. Steve's going, oh my gosh, you can have it. Don't be afraid to dream big. Now, and I'm not saying you have to take an international trip. I'm not saying you have to go out of the state. But don't be afraid to dream big, whatever that looks like for you. It could be anything. And for those of you who think, well, again, you know, he's at a large church. I haven't looked at the statistics for a long time, but 10 years ago, the statistic was 80% of the United Methodist congregations were 200 members or less. That's the real world, not where I am. That's the real world. But you can still dream big. So don't be afraid to think, what would be really different? What would it look like if this trip didn't look like other trips? So don't be afraid to dream big. Join with others who dream big, whether that's another church that would, you know, I've done that before, and gone with another youth choir, combined them, and went on a trip to Florida. It was many years ago. We had a blast. We camped out at KOA camps, all the way there and all the way back. And when I say join with others who dream big, make that your parents as well, church members. Don't have a scarcity mindset. I mean, that's like, oh, okay. The other day, I got a fortune cookie that said, be a winner. It's like, oh, I should have thought of that. How easy is that? So this may seem like that fortune cookie, be a winner. Don't try not to have a scarcity mindset. You know, you may say, I've only got X number of kids. Well, okay, that's a fact. But it's not a deal breaker. There are ways to do things with small groups. There are ways to do things on a small budget. Watch out for the scarcity mindset, because, boy, that can be a trap. It can be a real trap. Talk it up with anyone who will listen. I was talking to a young friend of mine who's a church musician yesterday, and I was talking about the importance of being transparent with the people that you're trying to get on board. I mean, just lay it out there. Say, I've got this dream, and I really think we could do this. It might not happen for 2 years, but I believe we can do this. It can happen. Talk with anybody who will listen. So the box is open. Choir tour doesn't have to be in the summer. It doesn't have to be every year. It doesn't have to be a tour. It doesn't have to be a mission trip. It doesn't have to be anything. The kids can experience amazing spiritual things. Someday I want to take a trip and take kids to the Norbertine Monastery in the desert outside of Albuquerque, because it's so beautiful. And you step into that place, and there's no denying the spirituality there is like gravity. It just grounds you, you know? I want to take kids there. There are a lot of places I want to take kids. So, for the most part, I guess that's what I have to say about tour. And I know some of that's really out there. Anybody have any questions? Comments? Yes, I'm sorry.
What was the name of that monastery?
Norbertine. N-O-R-B-E-R-T-I-N-E. And those brothers dedicate themselves to a life of work within the city. So they all work in the city, but they live out there in the desert. And it's gorgeous and easy to get to.
Do you talk about discovery for a minute, about how you decide where you're going to go and what you're going to do? Talk to me about tour company. Do you deal exclusively with the tour company? How do you decide, find out about this iconic lady, and discovery in the tour, the actual tour process itself, and just the nuts and bolts of the of the company?
Let me work backwards.
Okay.
I know it looks like we go overseas a lot. We took two overseas trips back to back, which I don't really like to do. But I wanted to get to Cuba before it opens up, because once it opens up, it's going to change so drastically. So that's why we did that. Now, one answer is we go places that I want to go,
yeah,
and places that I want to see. But I'm not thinking about, well, gosh, I want to see this, and the kids can go do something else. I mean, I want to discover things with them. I had contacts in Alaska. If I hadn't had contacts in Alaska, I would have found some. When I identify the place I want to go, then I set about trying to have a relationship with somebody there, whether it's a family member of a friend, or it's a United Methodist person, or I just established that. And also, let me say, and there are some church members who have given me a really hard time about this, I will never go to a place I've not been. I will not take young people to a place I've not been. So I always go on a pre-trip, always. It's just not safe to do it otherwise. And some people will roll their eyes and go, yeah, wow, good for you. Well, I'm just not going to take people to a place I haven't been. A case in point was actually an adult choir trip that I took to the UK. And there was a church that we were entertaining singing at this church, and they wanted us to come. And I checked it out, and it was awful. It would have been an awful theological train wreck. And had I not gone, I wouldn't have known. So so the discovery process, for the most part, is places I want to go. I've not used a tour company until we went to Cuba, because that one was just so unusual. And there were governmental things that we needed to figure out, those are changing daily about Cuba. I mean, we booked our flights to fly out of Miami, and not 2 months later, it was announced that the Houston airports would be open enough, you could fly direct from Houston. Now, that didn't happen in time for us to go, but, you know, stuff's just unfolding so fast. But most of the time, my parent handles all of that, all of the airfare. Now, we've talked to a travel agency just to do our air.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But she'll do the hotel, she wants to do all of that. She wants to have FaceTime with those people and get it all worked out. She's amazing that way. And there are a million details that she could talk to you about and would be happy to talk to you about. Her name is Linda Oppenheim. And if I knew she was up, I could call her right now and she'd talk to us. She's terrific. There was another question.
But do you find any, versus your all-in-one kind of tour company, do you find a cost savings issue? Is that just
Well, it just depends on where you're going. We just like to do it ourselves.
Right. That's part of the process.
Some of the tour companies will do they have these plug-and-play sort of trips.
It's their deal.
Yeah, and, you know, they're not always places I want to go.
Right.
And I don't really care sometimes how many people hear the choir, as long as the choir has an experience singing in that spot. We sang in Rosslyn Chapel in Scotland, which, if you read Da Vinci Code, which I didn't, plays a big part in Da Vinci Code, this 13th century chapel, just incredible. and you know, it's so tiny, it was us and as many people as could cram in there, but the experience of singing in that room was awesome. That wouldn't have happened with a tour company. Yes?
Talk a minute about budget, what maybe the church gives, you know, supports you with towards your tour, and what the kids have to pay, or fundraisers, or
right.
something.
These trips are not inexpensive.
Right.
We have two giant fundraisers, and again, y'all, bigger is bigger. We have two giant fundraisers. We sell pumpkins in the fall, and then we have a spaghetti lunch and auction in the spring. And we have those every year, even though tour happens every other year. So for every trip, we have two pumpkin sales and two spaghetti lunch auction sales receipts that go toward offsetting that cost. I think, and I'm just going to throw this out there, I think the trip to Cuba, actual cost for the kids was about $1,500. If you're going to fly somebody someplace,
yeah.
it's going to be $900. Wham! It's going to be. And people will come to you and say, bring an ad and say, look at this, United Airlines is $299 round trip to New York. Well, they have one seat on the plane.
Right.
You know, when you're booking 60, it's not going to be that.
Yeah.
And some travel agents will really monitor that for you and lock it in when it's at its lowest, if you have a travel agent you can trust. But we raise a lot of money selling pumpkins, and we raise a lot of money with our spaghetti lunch and auction. And the kids do it all. They work so hard. And they know it's for them, it's for the trip. And at the spaghetti lunch and auction, they auction themselves. Guys will do, like, two guys will get together and say, we'll do a weekend baseball camp for 10 boys or 10 kids. Girls will do babysitting. Not that the girls don't do sports, they do. But they'll do babysitting. We've had people say, kids say, we'll bake all of your holiday cookies for you. And actually, the people who said they were going to do that, I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be a disaster. And it was incredible. So they auction themselves off. It's very much them. Nobody's doing this for them. They invest. And I'm almost embarrassed to tell you how many pumpkins we sold last year. We have a great location.
Where did you get those?
Pumpkin Patch, USA.
Yeah.
Pumpkin Patch. It's operated out of North Carolina, and actually those people are United Methodists.
And they bring it in by the truckload.
And they bring it in by the truckload.
Wow.
It's very organized. And you only pay for what you sell. If something's damaged or rotted, you don't pay for it. You only pay for what you sell. I don't know how they do that.
The year it was 90 degrees.
Yeah, oh, Lord. What about the year
so
that it,
much.
Our first year it flooded, and some of the pumpkins were floating. It was bad. But the pumpkins come from a Navajo reservation in New Mexico by the truckload. What else?
When they sold holiday cookies, wherever they go towards their account, is everybody working for the greater whole?
Everybody's working for the greater good. We don't keep individual accounts.
Gotcha.
I've done it that way, and there are merits to doing it, you know, pros and cons. That's a lot of paperwork.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, that's a big job for a volunteer. It's a lot of work, but you know, I'd rather be on that bus than absolutely anywhere.
Yeah.
Yes?
Do you sing in robes most everywhere you go?
We do. Well, no. Let me take that back. We've done it both ways. I would say most of the time we have a tour outfit that we wear, like black pants and a shirt or a sweater, depending on where we go. But we have also taken robes.
What about instruments, handbells? Do you accompany your
choir? We had a youth handbell choir. We've not toured with handbells. We had a fabulous youth handbell choir for a while. One of our members was killed in a skiing accident, and we just sort of lost our heart for doing it. But we've not traveled with them, but I would. I mean, it just means, you know, taking some dads who are going to schlep those bell cases. But there are dads that are willing to do that.
On your Sunday morning schedule, your service is at 8:30. What time is their Sunday school?
9:45, 10 o'clock they get up there.
And what time do you have them there in the morning?
They're supposed to be singing at 8 o'clock. We have donut holes that are there that go away at 8 o'clock. That means most of them will come in their robe to sit down looking like a chipmunk. The donut holes do go away at 8 o'clock. I don't know why it works for me with youth. Yeah. I really don't. When I went to Chapelwood, I was afraid of kids, and I thought they hated me. And that first year was rough. Oh, my goodness, it was rough. And a parent who was an attorney but later was called to the ministry and became a United Methodist minister, I visited with him about it, and I mean, I was ready to leave. I said, I'm the wrong person for this job. I've made a mistake. And he heard me out, and then he said, you're not the wrong person. You're in the right place, and I'm going to pray for you every day. And I know my mother probably prays for me every day, although I don't think she's ever told me that. But I'd never had anybody tell me that before. And I was very moved by that. And by the next year, who knows if it was Jim's prayers or not, by the next year, things had completely turned around. And I found myself within 3 or 4 years just being so energized by being with kids. And that became my thing. And if somebody had told me that, I would have laughed at them. I quote all the time that God has a sense of humor, because I never thought I'd be doing youth. I never thought I'd like it. And when I was at Chapelwood, I would always say, gosh, I'm so glad I'm not trying to start a youth choir from scratch. So what happens? I get called to do a youth choir from scratch. But the quote I lean on is that the mark of God is that you will be led into places you did not intend to go. And I didn't intend to go there. I just didn't. But and age has nothing to do with it. Age has nothing to do with it. It's all about passion. I mean, look at me. I'll be 60 in a couple of years and am slightly infirm. And the kids accept me for who I am, and I love them, and it works out great. I have no intention of quitting anytime soon. Anything else? This was an odd one. I've got two more, one about building community and one about what I know now that I wish I'd known then. This was kind of an odd place to start, but I think they thought, boy, if people really want to go on tour, they're going to come at 8 o'clock in the morning. So I appreciate you being here. And I'm willing to help in any way I can, whether you know, want to visit or visit on the phone, or I can send you materials. I can put you in touch with Linda, my head counselor, who really knows how it works, and we'd be glad to help. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you.